This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the second weekend of June 2018. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. The conservative Texas Senate gets ready to tackle school shootings.
Some of the strategies will need additional funds by appropriations by the state legislature.
The story of a family pushed to the outskirts of Austin as mobile home parks redevelop.
They rented a spot 40 minutes outside the city on land that had no hookups for water or electricity.
And the Republic of Texas biker rally rolls into town.
We wanted to do it where it's more fun, so we decided to do it in Austin.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
I like to increase our social media presence, and I think it's critically important to get information quickly to parents if we have something, so they don't panic or so they don't rush to schools or they might interfere with police response.
That's Ashley Gonzalez, the new chief of the Austin School District's police department, talking about how he wants to make it easier to communicate with parents in the case of an emergency. Gonzalez comes to Austin from Norfolk, Connecticut, where he oversaw school resource officers. School safety, obviously top of mind for a lot of Texas parents after last month's school shooting in Santa Fe outside Houston, where 10 people were killed. This week, Santa Fe ISD quietly announced its new safety plan. It breaks down into three parts. One, more officers and security guards. Two, identify children with mental health issues and give extra security training for all employees. Well, that's kind of two things, but they put it into one. And then three, hiring more high school counselors and giving them more time to devote to the mental health needs of students. But Santa Fe ISD is not done with that. The school district created a committee of parents, teachers, law enforcement, and others to continue looking for ways to keep their schools safe. And they're going to consider metal detectors, clear backpacks, social media monitoring, and other ideas. This is a small school district, relatively speaking. It has four schools, two elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school, and fewer than 5,000 students. Now, on Monday, the Texas Senate, dominated by Republicans, of course, will begin its work on school safety. And this effort comes after Governor Greg Abbott released a list of recommendations for how Texas schools could work to limit future school shootings. KUT's Claire McInerney reports on the legislative efforts to make Abbott's plan a reality.
Governor Abbott has laid out more than 40 recommendations for school districts to adopt. They included increasing mental health services for students, hardening school infrastructure, and addressing some of Texas's gun laws. But most of these recommendations will cost money. Abbott said he allocated $120 million toward this, but...
Now, going forward, some of the strategies will need additional funds by appropriations by the state legislature or additional allocations from the federal government.
So, leading into the 2019 legislative session, the Senate Select Committee on Violence in Schools and School Security will look at realistic ways to implement Abbott's plan. The meetings on Monday and Tuesday will include testimony from people who can explain how to improve school security, limiting entrance points, and installing alarm systems focused on active shooters. The agenda for the meeting doesn't include Texas gun laws. Here in Austin, the new police chief for Austin ISD, Ashley Gonzalez, says the district is already doing many of the things Abbott laid out in his recommendation.
We have a strong presence in our high schools, middle schools, and we have a great response to our elementary schools. In addition to that, the district has mental health clinics that are dedicated to our students.
One part of Abbott's plan aims to increase the number of teachers with a weapon. Texas has a school marshal program, which allows trained teachers to carry a concealed weapon in the classroom. Students and other teachers in the school are not told if someone on staff is armed. Abbott's plan removes the fee to get the required training. Gonzalez says he's not a big fan of this tactic for Austin schools.
I think my feeling is that I like teachers to concentrate on what they were trained to do and not give them additional responsibilities. Having a firearm on a person is an additional responsibility. Maintaining proficiency with a firearm takes additional training.
Abbott released his plan after hosting three roundtable discussions at the Capitol about school safety and gun violence in schools. He heard from legislators, gun control and gun rights activists, educators, and survivors from the shootings in Sutherland Springs and Santa Fe. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
We'll be right back.
Cabinet and President Trump had a teleconference this week to talk about how states are preparing for hurricane season. As KUT's Audrey McGlinchey reports, Abbott says the state is ready for another Hurricane Harvey.
Governors of states hit hard by natural disasters last year joined the call, including leaders from Puerto Rico and Florida. As for Texas, Abbott said the state's prepared.
We are ready, and we are taking steps on a daily basis to make sure we will be able to address any challenge coming our way.
More than 80 people died in Hurricane Harvey last year, which hit Texas in late August. While Abbott said storms this year are not expected to be as bad, the state has started dredging waterways near Houston, including the San Jacinto River and Lake Conroe.
To ease pressure that may arise from a potential 2018 hurricane season.
Hurricane season began June 1st. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration predicts anywhere from 5 to 9 hurricanes will develop in the Atlantic Ocean this year. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
Some Texas politicians, Republican and Democrat, seized on a comment President Trump made at that meeting. He said the Coast Guard performed 16,000 rescues during Hurricane Harvey, in part because Texans went out in their boats to watch the hurricane. KUT's Ben Philpott explains.
Joe Strauss, Speaker of the Texas House, went on Twitter to, again, reiterate this idea that, hey, people who were in their boats were coming to save people in Houston. They were not coming to watch the hurricane. You have Lupe Valdez, the former Dallas County Sheriff, who is also running for governor against Greg Abbott, saying, you know, hey, Greg Abbott is staying silent on this while President Trump is trashing the brave Texans that came to try and do water rescues in their own personal boats. And with Governor Abbott's kind of initial non-response to what President Trump has said, it gives an opening for those who are not supporters of Trump to fill the airwaves with, no, this is what happened. And if you don't believe this, then you're in the wrong.
That's KUT's Ben Philpott. Health officials began a program this week aimed at reducing maternal mortality in Texas. More than 160 hospitals around the state are going to start using a new set of guidelines for treating pregnant women who are at risk for hemorrhage, hypertension, and opioid abuse. KUT's Ashley Lopez has more.
In Austin this week, hospital leaders met about what the state is calling the Texas AIM initiative. Basically, state health officials are getting hospitals to use these protocols referred to as safety bundles. The idea is to standardize across the state how doctors deal with pregnant women who are at risk of common complications that have led to maternal deaths in the state.
Our goal is to have as many hospitals participate that want to participate.
That's Dr. Amanda Hall with the Texas Department of State Health Services. She says so far, 168 hospitals have joined. That's out of the 242 hospitals in Texas that offer maternity services.
We know that there is an opportunity here to really make a difference here in Texas as it relates to maternal mortality and severe maternal morbidity. So we're very happy to see the number of hospitals that are here today and participating.
Part of the goal of this meeting is for hospitals to discuss how they plan to actually implement these protocols and what it would look like in their own hospitals.
And what it looks like in one hospital may look different in another hospital, and that's okay.
That's especially true because some hospitals have already been using these safety bundles. For example, John Harkin says these are already part of his routine. He teaches at UT Austin's Dell Medical School and has a practice with Seton Hospitals.
We didn't wait for Texas AIM to come along. We've had these because it's evidence-based, and being an academic teaching center, we were able to get these up and running. I'm going to tell you, as from my own experience, these things work great. They save lives.
And here's why. Harkin says a lot of what doctors do is repetitive, and these safety bundles create yet another routine, and this one is backed by science.
Physicians at times are loath to adopt standardization, and you hear things like that, you know, well, you know, each patient, and you have to treat it like an art, and they're all different and that kind of stuff. But in certain things, it's not an art. It is a science.
And he says there are examples out there in the world of strict routines being safer.
Airline pilots go through the exact same protocols and checklists every single time they land a plane. Doesn't matter where they're landing, doesn't matter who's in the driver's seat and who's the co-pilot, they do the exact same thing every time because they know that that is the safest way to get things done.
Texas health officials also say there's evidence that creating protocols in hospitals has curbed maternal deaths in other states. For instance, one of the big drivers behind California's effort to drive down maternal mortality rates was using new protocols in hospitals. And in just 4 years, California cut its rate by half. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Stories of displacement are common in this city where there isn't a lot of affordable housing. But what happens when people living in mobile homes are displaced? For KUT News, Marissa Charpentier reports.
Blanca Torres and her family have lived in a mobile home in Del Valle for almost a year. The family used to live at the Thrasher Lane Mobile Home Park in Austin, but last May, the landowner, Urban Rio LLC, removed residents and sold the land to developers.
No había lugar para mi traerla, entonces tenía que moverla para otro lugar.
Torres says her family couldn't find an affordable place in Austin to move their mobile home, so they had to leave.
Pues nos teníamos que mover, no teníamos opciones, o sea, te vas o te vas.
They rented a spot 40 minutes outside the city on land that had no hookups for water or electricity. Between moving the home and buying necessary supplies like a water tank, septic system, and electrical equipment, they've spent around $18,000, and they still don't have internet or air conditioning. Torres commutes to Austin for work and to take her two kids to school. The hardest part of that long drive is just getting down the road that leads to their home. It's a half-mile stretch of gravel and dirt. When it rains, the road quickly turns to mud, and they can't get out.
Yo llegué aquí cuando mi niño tenía 3 años y medio.
Torres, who moved to the U.S. from Mexico 14 years ago, says she never thought she'd end up in a situation like this, one with worse living conditions than in Mexico.
Rancho más de lo más pobre que pueda haber en México.
Torres isn't the only mobile homeowner coping with displacement. In 2015, over 50 residents of Cactus Rose Mobile Home Park were forced out for redevelopment. And according to a study by the Latino Research Initiative at UT Austin, 16 mobile home parks are at risk of development in the coming years. That's because there's little protecting them.
And it's one of the benefits, actually, in Code Next, is that there are a number of mobile home parks currently in Austin that are not zoned as mobile home parks. So they are ripe for redevelopment at any time.
That's Connor Kenny of the City of Austin's Planning Commission. He says Code Next, a proposed change to the city's land development code, hopes to address this issue. It officially rezones several existing mobile home parks as mobile home parks. Kenny says these measures could help protect people living in mobile homes in Austin now, but it doesn't help people like Blanca Torres, who were displaced already.
We can do a lot to preserve the ones that are already here, but in terms of reviving Thrasher or any other park, I would like to think so, but I'm afraid that they're just gone for good.
The city council could vote on Code Next this summer. Marissa Charpentier, KUT News.
U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry was in Austin this week. You might remember him. He used to be governor of the state. And he is working on a plan to subsidize coal and nuclear power in the name of national security. Details are kind of scarce right now. This idea, though, has been the subject of speculation and criticism from energy experts, environmentalists, and grid operators. What could it mean for Texas? KUT's Mos Bouchel reports.
A lot of the people I talked to about the plan sounded kind of like this.
You know, it's...
exasperated. This voice belongs to Joshua Rhodes. He does research for UT Austin's Energy Institute.
I don't know why they're doing this.
The administration says keeping coal and nuclear plants online is good for national security because they keep their fuel on site.
But that does not necessarily mean that you will always be able to use that fuel. We actually saw during Harvey that some piles of coal got so wet they were no longer able to be used. We've seen coal piles freeze over.
Here in Texas, a few coal plants recently shuttered. Two others appear to be in trouble. Rhodes says there's a chance under the plan things could turn around for those plants.
I could see how they might be pushed back into the market.
What would happen then?
It would be very disruptive to everyone's operations.
Before joining Rice University's Center for Energy Studies, Michael Marr spent 30 years at ExxonMobil.
It really changes the rules on which investments have been made, especially, I guess, renewables near term, but any new gas facilities and existing gas facilities, too.
As one reason, oil and gas interests oppose the rule along with wind, solar, and environmental groups. Now, I did find one person who supports the plan. Bryn Kelly is an energy market analyst in New York. She points out that Texas electric generation capacity will be pretty tight this summer. She says it might not be if retired coal plants were helped back online.
A diversified fleet is a good idea.
But that's not the way the grid works, says Samantha Gross. Gross works on energy security with the Brookings Institution. She says by propping up coal, the government risks pushing other generators offline.
Possibly more economic, and most likely gas plants would run less.
And adding more coal means adding to pollution and greenhouse gas emissions.
This is actually an action that would increase emissions and increase costs. It's running both of those actions the wrong direction.
One of the reasons Gross and others say the proposal feels more like it's motivated by politics than by smart policy. Mose Bushel, KT News.
Capital Metro has launched the biggest change ever to its bus system. The CAP remap plan affects more than half of all routes. KUT's Saida Hassan spoke with riders on the first day of the rollout earlier this week.
Apurva Sukthankar picked a good day to take the bus in Austin for the first time.
So I'm new to this town. I just moved in a couple days ago. So this is my first time that I'm taking this route. And I'm going to downtown Austin just to explore the place.
I met Sukthankar at a stop for the 801 Metro Rapid Bus on Guadalupe Street. She doesn't have a car, and she likes the thought of having frequent bus service around town. CAP remap brings 14 high-frequency routes to the system, meaning buses run at least every 15 minutes. So it wasn't long before Sukthankar's bus showed up.
Route 801 Metro Rapid to South Park Meadows, will bring and exit.
Later in the day, I met Yoshi Kasahara. He was waiting to take the bus from Hyde Park to UT. He's a graduate student, and he takes the bus almost every day to get to campus.
You said you'd heard about these changes?
Yeah, I heard of it. I saw some advertisement posted on the bus stop.
But even with the publicity effort by CAP Metro, Kasahara still wasn't sure whether the changes would affect his regular routes. That was the response from many of the riders I talked to on the day of the rollout. They had heard about CAP remap, but they weren't quite sure whether their commutes would change. One of the goals of the plan is to route more buses onto major streets, taking them off of smaller neighborhood roads. CAP Metro says that will help make the bus network more efficient as a whole. Kasahara says he wouldn't mind adjusting his commute if it means a better citywide network.
If that is the purpose of the change, I think that it would be a good change.
But other riders have voiced their disapproval. A common complaint is many people now have to walk farther to get to a bus stop. CAP Metro CEO Randy Clark says the agency is ready to take any and all feedback with the new routes up and running. He says he expects tweaks will need to be made in the coming weeks and months. In a statement issued yesterday, Clark wrote, quote, "This is a reset of our system and the result of 2 years of planning and extensive community outreach. We are making a shift from looking at an individual route to a network of better connected routes." CAP Metro is offering free bus fare this week as riders adjust to the changes. You can find more information about CAP Remap at KUT.org. Saida Hassan, KUT News.
Team owners of the Columbus Crew plan to move the Major League Soccer team to North Austin. Avery Miles reports on how Precourt Sports Ventures wants to work with the city to open up the stadium by 2021.
After listening to both city and community input, Precourt Sports Ventures chose McCalla Place in North Austin as the future site of their new stadium. Last week, a city report suggested $30 million in infrastructure improvements would be necessary to get the site ready. Columbus Crew President Dave Greeley said the plan will not cost the city of Austin anything.
So we would not only pay for everything, we would operate everything, we would maintain everything, we would pay for all the annual expenses, we would pay for all the upkeep, and meanwhile, Austin would enjoy all the benefits of this surrounding soccer park area 52 weeks a year.
Greeley estimates the company will put $200 million into the project. The team would play at a temporary site starting next spring. Greeley hopes to have some sort of understanding with the city before the council goes on break in July. Avery Miles, KUT News.
Author and TV host Anthony Bourdain was found dead in his hotel room today in France while working on his CNN series. CNN called the death a suicide. Bourdain was 61. He visited Austin frequently, speaking at the Paramount Theater, at Book People, even did an entire episode about the city during South by Southwest.
For a short period each year, a mid-sized Texas city, its strangely un-Texan capital, becomes something else, a hipster apocalypse. There's nothing to do but surrender.
A few years before that episode of No Reservations aired, we spoke to Anthony Bourdain here at KUT, and I asked him what he thought about Austin.
I loved Austin for the first time I arrived, because I think I came in 2000 on a book tour. And I remember going back from the bookstore event, and whoever was driving me around turned on the radio, and it was incredible, amazing playlist. It was just the radio here was great, unlike any place else in America. So right away, that was something I noticed. And this is a town that's been just very, very good to me from the beginning. I mean, a lot of fans here, interesting fans, and it's just a place I just felt connected to right away.
I know that you've eaten at Perla's. I think you ate at Gordo's Donuts.
I've had some good barbecue as well.
Ruby's. They made a little ad, I think, in the local weekly with you sitting there. Any plans for an Austin episode? Or?
Well, we shot a part of a larger episode here. I'd like to. On the other hand, I kind of don't want to ruin it. You know, I don't want to come with cameras. I want to slip quietly into town and eat all of the places that I haven't been able to eat when I come here. You know, it's frankly very frustrating to me, because I have not eaten as widely in Austin as I'd like to.
And when you say ruin it, how does having the cameras around affect your dining experience?
Well, I don't want to come back to a place I love and see my picture on the wall, you know? I mean, I understand people doing it, but that's kind of embarrassing, you know? I don't sit there eating my sandwich with a big picture of myself over my shoulder, you know? Next, I'll be talking about myself in the third person. It's like, Tony likes the barbecue.
But people love you. That's why they do it.
I don't know. I get it.
You don't want to be loved, Tony?
I'd like to be able to walk into an old man bar at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, sit down, have a beer and some nasty chicken wings, you know, listen to Lynyrd Skynyrd over the sound system, and have a quiet afternoon drunk someday. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, you know, because you've got a lot of things going for you since Kitchen Confidential. Like you say, you live a wonderful lifestyle now compared to going home with the swollen hands and a sore back every day, standing next to a deep fryer. What are the bad things about? I mean, what are the negatives of this theme that you've built for yourself?
Listen, don't misunderstand me. Life is really, really, really good. Who gets to do what I do? I got a best-selling book here. It's ridiculous to complain about, you know, the inconvenience of getting, you know, recognized in an airport when you're, you know, on the phone or, you know, going through a personal crisis or something like that. Mm-hmm. It is a tiny, tiny, tiny price to pay.
Right.
I would like to be able to walk into that old man bar, sit down and have a pint, you know, and the bartender treat me with complete contempt and rudeness. That would be just wonderful.
But people recognize you all over the place now, I guess.
Hey, listen, it doesn't suck being me.
Anthony Bourdain was 61. Suicide is not a logical outcome of adversity. Recovery is possible. Most people who think about suicide do recover. If you or someone you know may be considering suicide, contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-800-273-8255. Republic of Texas Biker Rally, the ROT Rally, is in town this weekend. Now, tonight, Friday, there's a big parade with thousands of motorcycles and their riders snaking their way from the Travis County Expo Center to downtown. But this thing is going to go all weekend long. And as KUT's Jimmy Moss reports, it's become an Austin summer tradition that could be going away.
In the early 90s, Jerry Bragg had already started and sold two businesses. His Dallas-based motorcycle club was approached by Harley-Davidson to host a rally in 1995.
We wanted to do it where it's more fun, so we decided to do it in Austin, which was a first for Harley, having a group out of one city do it in another city. So it was very, very successful.
The 5,000 attendees beat Harley's largest regional-sponsored rally by nearly 50%. They had a bigger year in 1996. By then, Harley-Davidson was ready to move on, but ROT ralliers were not.
The organizers at the time, me included, were approached by the attendees saying, "We don't want to leave Austin. Can you keep doing this?" We said, "We'll do it one more year." Well, that's turned into over 20 years. So we're still here, still doing it, and we hope to continue doing it for another 20.
23 years later, the twice-retired Jerry and his wife, Colleen Bragg, have turned ROT Rally into a behemoth festival. 4 days and three nights of music, camping, food, vendors, and motorcycles. The Braggs start cooking up ideas for each rally more than a year in advance. Everything from the right mix of vendors, what attractions to add, and even improvements on the Expo Center grounds. They built a flat track for motorcycle racing. The third and fourth leg of the AMA Supermoto National Championship Series will take place this weekend in the middle of ROT. There's a tattoo expo, roller derby, and custom bike builders on site. Colleen Bragg is expecting this year to be one of their biggest, including having ZZ Top as the festival's headliner on Saturday.
We've been trying to get ZZ Top for about 7 years now. It's what our customer wants to see. So there's just been conflicts with their scheduling, and so we finally got them after 7 years of trying, and it's paying off.
As promoters of one of Austin's biggest festivals, Jerry and Colleen Bragg have managed to keep ROT Rally and the relationship going.
It's not easy being married and working together 24/7, but if you love each other, you make it work.
And we know our strengths and our weaknesses. We know what he's good at that I'm not. I mean, I do some great things that he doesn't do. So, I mean, it works. It is tough. We're married. You know, marriage is tough.
She's really the backbone of the rally. She keeps everybody's focus on making it right.
You know, it's not hard to do. We've got a great team. I'm just kind of the orchestra leader.
She and her team will be orchestrating the bike parade today. Motorcycles will be making their way downtown. The parade is what Jerry Bragg calls a gift back to the city. But as the rally grows, so do costs and security concerns. He says the rally pays nearly $50,000 for road closures and security. As that number gets higher and higher, it cuts into their ability to pay for other things like staff, music talent, and attractions. Bragg says there's support on the city council for the city taking on some of those costs, but the parade's future outside of the Expo Center is anything but certain. Jimmy Moss, KUT News.
KUT Weekend for the second weekend of June 2018. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org. Or you can just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org.